Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin in a moment and speak with a young Libyan just back from Benghazi, where he witnessed the brutality of Gaddafi's regime mowing down freedom fighters with anti-aircraft cannons. Akram Ramadan joins us from London. Then we'll examine the role of the media and social media in the revolution sweeping the Middle East, with a particular focus on Al Jazeera. Marwan Krady, an expert on Arab media and politics, offers his analysis. Then finally, we'll look into the increasingly prominent role of dirty tricks in politics today. First, the sting by a Republican operative against NPR, and before that, a prank phone call that embarrassed the Republican governor of Wisconsin. Mark Feldstein, who teaches media and public affairs at George Washington University, joins us to look back at the role of dirty tricksters, as well as assessing their growing impact on politics today. And a quick reminder that this and early programs are available at ianmasters.com. I also write a daily essay, which you can get by clicking on the blog tab at ianmasters.com, where you can also contact me. Now let's go to an interview I did 2 hours ago with a young Libyan who, although I had to ask him the same question 3 times, is a part of the generation freeing themselves and putting their lives on the line in Libya. I'm speaking with Akram Ramadan, who is a London-based Libyan exile who just returned yesterday from Benghazi, where he witnessed freedom fighters liberating themselves and their families from the Gaddafi dictatorship. Welcome to Background Briefing, Akram Ramadan.
Welcome.
At this point, there is a call, I believe, for a no-fly zone over Libya, and over, in particular over Tripoli. What's your understanding of where things stand? Because it appears to be breaking down into a civil war. Is that the way you read the current situation?
Yeah, the current climate, that's what it suggests, to be honest. What I have seen there is just like the people are getting massacred, if you want to put a nicer term to it, for just the oil of the wealth of that country, to be honest, and this dictatorship to want to stay in power.
And what motivates Gaddafi's supporters? Because is it purely money?
No, purely to be free, to be honest, to be just democratic. What started this problem was people asking for freedom of speech, and he went and hired some mercs and started sniping them out and shooting them out with 14.5mm cannons, which started in Al-Baida, and the rebels, as they've been called all over the world, what I call them, freedom fighters, took over the prison in Al-Baida, then it escalated to another prison in Benghazi and took a lot of weapons, and we are living it now. It's nearly 80-20 days, I think.
Akram, my question was, I understand that the freedom fighters, and you said you've witnessed bodies of those who attacked the arms depots in Benghazi who were mowed down by anti-aircraft weapons, which indicate the brutality of the Gaddafi regime.
Yes, of course. It's a brutal regime. The people have been crying for nearly 40 years. And nobody's listening. You know, there have been demonstrations. They tried to overturn the system, but foreign governments have intervened. It's been a massacre since Gaddafi took over, to be honest. He killed the education, and he killed the health system. Basically, that's what the country is, to be honest, run by Gaddafi's and Gaddafi's goons.
So tell me, though, what do you think, Akram Ramadan, motivates the people who are fighting for Gaddafi? Are they purely doing it for money?
No, nobody's doing it for money. Okay, you might find it in any war like this, but what motivates them is to have a democratic system. When they open their minds and they speak loud, you know, and they start thinking loud, like most European countries or all the European countries and most of the world, you know, just basic rights. But what really, really made them go with their lives is when they seen people have been killed by mercenaries, basically. That's when Libyan armies handed down, when, you know, all the consulates and the embassies backed out and said, we resign from this regime. This motivates them. When you get a foreign body, it comes and starts kidnapping women. That what made me go there. When they started kidnapping women, raping them and burning them, and you don't see their bodies anymore. You go there, you hear stories, it's unbelievable. But when you see pictures and things that have been photographed and kept for evidence, it's indescribable, to be honest. I mean, the Libyans themselves think Israel is a terrorist state. And now they're saying, funny enough, I mean, it's not really funny, the matter said even Israel didn't do this stuff. Israel themselves, they cannot think of stuff that Gaddafi has come up with. I mean, I'm sorry. I mean, I don't mean anything bad to the state of Israel, to be honest, but this is what the Libyans are saying inside. They say, bloody hell, even Israel didn't do this. So it's 6,000 guaranteed. I guarantee you 6,000 people have, you know, have died in these 18 days. And it's a very, very high death rate, to be honest. If it happened in Bosnia, if it happened in Kosovo, if it happened God knows where, it would be called an ethnic cleansing or something like that. But I don't know what to say, to be honest. It's heartbreaking, it's heart-wrenching, and brings a tear to your eye.
But Akram Ramadan, given that it looks like a kind of military stalemate where Gaddafi's forces are counterattacking, even though freedom fighters are close to Tripoli, what do you think keeps Gaddafi's fighters going? Is it purely money?
No, it's nothing to do with Gaddafi fighters.
Yes, the Gaddafi fighters.
You mean the guys, the pro-Gaddafis, you mean? That's what we're talking about now.
Yes, that's what I wanted to get. I wanted you to get your opinion of what
about
motivates
that.
Them.
Well, there's a 50% rumor, 50% truth, that every family from his big tribe, for example, Sirte, and some other towns, he's taking people out of houses. So if you're an officer in the Libyan army, they're going to take your brother out from that house and they put a gun to his head by one of the mercenaries, basically. The people who obey Gaddafi. Libyans don't obey Gaddafi. Libyans fear Gaddafi.
And
that's what makes it them fight. That's one factor. The other factor, he's got all his brand new equipment there. Khamis, his son, Khamis, has got weapons never been seen before on the Middle East. Why he hasn't got media there? Why does he not let you guys go in? Why does he scramble most of the Arabic channels over Tripoli?
Well, what do you think, Akram Ramadan, is required now?
Drastic situation needs a drastic answer. I leave that to your imagination, to be honest.
Right. Well, let's deal with one of the things on the table then, the no-fly zone. What's your opinion about that?
No-fly zone never works. It never worked in the last 10 years, in the 90s, mid-90s, when they had an embargo on him after Lockerbie and the UTA. It never worked. It just made other countries richer. For example, Tunisia and Malta, because we could not fly out. I was lucky enough to flee one of the last flights when that no-fly zone happened. And what did that do? Everything started coming through ships. Are you going to see all the harbors? Are you going to see all the harbors in Tunisia and Malta?
So what's it going to take to get rid of this monster and his family?
One guy said to me, Tom Cruise with Mission Impossible, to be honest.
So you think there should be a kind of covert action?
A drastic action, whichever way you want.
Uh-huh.
You know, if you're going in my way, I think I'll probably put a cruise as soon as he puts his bloody phone on.
But tell me though, Akram Ramadan, would there be a backlash if Europeans went in there and, took out Gaddafi?
Well, Europeans can, I'll tell you, some people don't mind, actually. I mean, people, taxi drivers in particular, turn into politicians all of a sudden. And I picked up a lot of, you know, chit-chat and people, what they want and what their aspirations are and what they're trying to see. And a sweet collection of ideas. But they want him out. I mean, if America comes and have a base like it had before when the king was there, they don't mind. But what the problem is with them, they don't want to start fighting the Americans or fighting the Europeans. The Americans and the Europeans, they should contact the right people. Now, I mean, Mr. Haig, the foreign minister for the United Kingdom government, I think they didn't ask the right guys. I mean, they've got files on us. People have been campaigning in the UK for the last 14 years, 10 years. I mean, I started campaigning against Gaddafi, or as they say it, victory day for me was 2004, because we lost fear of Gaddafi. We used to fear him a lot. It was 2004 for me, and most Libyans haven't got that fear anymore. So that's one of the first victories in a situation like this. To get rid of him, they need guidance and speak to the right people. There's a lot of opposition people who live in the States who can give them a good idea. But I wouldn't be talking to a scholar like your researcher talked to me before. I think your producer spoke to me before. The guy has been in that country, in America, for example, for the last, I don't know, 30 years. He never even Googled Libya until this happened, and then one of the places where probably his villages or his family is got blown up or got beaten or had something nasty. So they really should look into the foreign bodies, all the Libyan in exile who have been campaigning for the last 20 years about Gaddafi. People got shot in front of the Libyan embassy with Yvonne Fletcher. They're still campaigning till today. One of them used to be the head of Newsweek Arabic, Mr. Mahmoud Shamma. He's one of the Libyan opposition leaders. Mr. Briggs, who is in Newsweek now, he's a Libyan, and so I think the American government should be looking at the right places at the right time. Go and jump in a helicopter and go landing in El Kish or whatever it's called. Man, the guys there's like the cowboys, just like the people of Texas. They haven't seen a foreign guy for a long time coming out of a helicopter with machine guns in his hand. I think it's the wrong way to go. There's so many cards have to be played, and have to be played right, to be honest.
So, Akram Ramadan, your family's had a long history of oppression from the Gaddafis, right? Your father was a political prisoner.
Yes, he was a PhD. He was a professor in a Tripoli University, which he changed his name to Al-Fatah University. He was a professor there, and he was just started working on the solar power program and the nuclear power program. And when he's been ordered to change direction and go into, something else. And the rest is history. I mean, they took him in. On 7th of the 5th, 1984, there was the beginnings of a coup in Libya, in Bab el-Azizia. And that night, he got arrested. All the scholars have been arrested, American graduates, UK graduates, PhD holders, master's holders, stuff like this. A lot of people went to that hellhole called Abu Slim prison, which had the massacre after that in 1996. Luckily, my dad got released in 88, and then he claimed asylum back in the UK. I was born when he was doing his PhDs here in the UK, so I think that's one of the luckiest things happened to Libya, that I am outside this country, I can speak with.
Sure. And that massacre in 1996 that you referred to, at the
1,270 people.
Right.
But documented. We've got them all documented, picture by picture, photo by photo.
And what's worth noting here is that massacre was conducted by Gaddafi's brother-in-law,
Abdullah Snoussi.
Right, who was recently entertained by Beyonce.
No, the one who been entertained by Beyonce is Saif al-Islam the other idiot.
Oh, it was?
Yeah, Abdullah Snoussi goes out of Libya, he will probably get assassinated. He's unwanted on all the wanted lists by probably all the other terrorist groups who've been bouncing about in Europe at that time.
I see. So what do you think is going to happen to this family? Are they going to...
The Gaddafis?
Yeah, they're going to sneak away and spend all their stolen billions, or are they going to be...
Oh, no, you have to change that number. It's not a billion or billions. You have to go up a bit more than that. It starts with the letter T. It's trillions.
Are you serious?
I am not joking you.
Wow. So tell me, what do you think is going to happen to them? They're going to end up against the wall like Ceausescu, or are they going to find some safe haven?
Oh, I think I've got a different view. I call it Ella Hitler.
Uh-huh. Oh, you think he's going to take a pill?
You know how Hitler died?
Yeah, yeah.
That's it.
I see.
That's how I call it, Ella Hitler.
And so when do you think this is going to happen?
It depends what pressure is on him. Depends how much pressure is on him. I mean, if the freedom fighters, the FFs are knocking on his door, he'll probably do it because he's going to run out of people protecting him.
Well, that won't be a day too soon. And in the meantime, thousands of your countrymen are dying. Is there any kind of final appeal that you want to make, or any ideas? It looks
I
like
I have an idea. I might even page you up today on Facebook if Facebook doesn't kick me out, to be honest. I'm asking for all the Libyan students abroad who are on grants from the Libyan government and that who have been stopped yesterday from receiving any money anymore from the embassies, because the embassies do not exist anymore. Most foreign governments do not declare government as a state yet, but they don't say it loudly. But now embassies are working abroad. I witnessed when the London embassy fell. So I asked these guys, go and claim asylum and put pressure on your countries. I'm so sorry to say this, but I think that's not a card we have to play on top of them. Libya's got 5,000 students just in the UK. Funny enough, there's 200 in Sandhurst Academy becoming future officers. God knows what happens, because Gaddafi came from Sandhurst. He stayed 1.5 years in it, and then he became the coup leader, founder of this Al-Jamahiriya.
It's amazing to me that this man has been treated as a world statesman, if you will, or at least a legitimate
leader. He's been treated like the king of Africa, the statesman. He's been invited to the States. He's been invited to London. Well, in London, we stopped into it. We went to the Prime Minister and said, hey, he comes to London and somebody's going to kill him. Don't even think of doing something like this. So that's why he's never been accepted here. And then that's why he had so much bodyguards with him in France, because France allowed them, because he can pay them off, if you know what I mean.
Sure.
It's weird, the world, how it runs.
Well, look, I thank you so much for joining us here today in Los Angeles, Akram Ramadan.
We're in Los Angeles. Thank you very much, Los Angeles. Thank you for listening to us, and thank you for all your interest. Thank you.
Thank you. I was speaking then with Akram Ramadan, a London-based Libyan exile who just returned yesterday from Benghazi, where he witnessed freedom fighters liberating themselves and their families from the Gaddafi dictatorship. Let's take a brief station break, and we'll be back talking about Al Jazeera's double standard.